Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, the wonderful, the talented Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board in his brand new t-shirt once again. Bowls for Kids' Sake. It looks fantastic.
Oh, it's not a brand new t-shirt. Oh. It's from 2016.
We're actually could see each other through a real window now in this brand new studio. We are high atop the Civic Media Tower over State Street here in downtown Madison, a block off the Capitol Square. Welcomed as always on our Wednesday, a crossover Wednesday. We bring you from beautiful Lake Wasota up north. It is Pat Kreitlow of Up North News, and from our nation. Capital, our friend and colleague Trevi Olson, the senior advisor at the Lincoln Project. Gentlemen, how are you?
Just four guys with glasses as I look at our screen here. It's like the worst Brady Bunch open ever. It's just four guys in their specs. We're good, thank you.
We're good, good. That's great to see you both. Pat, had the pleasure of being on your show, a little snafu with my TV part, but really that's probably all the best for the TV or the viewing audience on the stream. You just could see me. That's all you need, or hear me. That's all you need.
I'm just very excited to get this studio on State Street, you know, fired up. Yeah. And it's looking good. You've got a big old screen TV mm-hmm. behind you with the show logo. It looks so professional. Yeah, you got this couch behind you, which I question in a radio studio. I mean,
wasn't my choice.
Maybe for some group interviews, but right now it just, I don't know.
The problem with that is that it's also an incredibly low couch.
Yes,
like you sit on it and no matter your age, you're going to feel old because you're like, oh, I can't get out of this.
But it feels like it could be like a therapy couch. I'll just have a therapist come in and, you know, we'll have therapy.
Is that not why you book Trigvi every week? Is he not absolutely giving you therapy?
It is therapy for me.
I don't know what he's charging you, but it's probably not enough for his services.
You know, a beverage up north sometime. That's the
there
that's
you go.
The, there but you go. Or in Milwaukee for the debate.
Oh, absolutely. I want to make sure we shout out to Rebecca, our graphic designer here at Civic, and also the tech people for, helping us out with the logo today and things here down at the studio. Pat, great show this morning. One of the things that you were talking about was public education. Had some folks on here in Wisconsin. They have, a big conference coming up in August. We're going to try to promote that a little bit. But give folks a synopsis. I know Trigvi and I have talked about it. This issue of public education and how it relates to small towns from Merrill to Richland Center to Shawnee, Wisconsin, all across these small towns in the state.
Well, I guess the thing that I found most surprising about this new agreement between Governor Evers and legislative Republicans is that while education advocates are happy about the $1 billion in what's called spendable money, it's being distributed through the usual Byzantine system of formulas or algorithms or mice looking for cheese and mazes. However the money comes out, there will still be 40% of school districts next year will have to make do with less state aid. And that's in a time of inflation. So that's only exacerbated. So we had the Beloit superintendent on today to talk a bit about it. But I mean, we could barely scratch the surface on, I mean, we all know from working in the Capitol building how complex it is. It just hurts. It just hurts that with a $7 billion surplus, we couldn't this time around finally fix things to make it a little less insane and better support our students.
Trivia, we talked earlier on Pat's show, Up North News, every morning, 6 until 8, Monday through Friday on Civic Media. Small places that you and I know, like Ithaca, Wisconsin, just outside of Richland Center, those school districts are the communities. Politically speaking, I just don't see how this is smart for Republicans to be attacking not to exaggerate, the possible extinction of communities if you get rid of these small districts.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is in most of Wisconsin, outside maybe of Dane County and Milwaukee County, right? The schools are the public schools are the hubs of the community. Even I think Pat would say agree with me on this. Even in a city like Eau Claire, that's a pretty big city, public schools are a central part of that community, maybe the cornerstone of that community, what unites the community. I was just thinking, though, Pat, you know, it strikes me as some of this with the formulas, you know, it ends up being the law of unintended consequences. Back in the early 90s, stuff gets passed, and that's the way it's done. And it was the right, it may have been the right sort of method for then. But it just, now would be the time, it seems to me, with the kind of money that is on the table in the state of Wisconsin, to revisit it and get out of those laws of unintended consequences.
It all comes back to what I describe as maintenance. Too many people build something, they cut the ribbon, they're so proud of it, then they do no maintenance, and then years down the line go, how could this have happened? This is going to be so expensive, when why wouldn't you just make, and the same can be said for school funding formulas, is that every year you look at it rather than waiting 20, 30 years and saying, well, now we've got to invent this from scratch. And it, look, that's a failure on both parties have controlled the legislature during that time. We really had an opportunity this year if we could have overcome the partisanship, but unfortunately that didn't happen.
Pat, about 30 seconds left before the break. Coming up on Up North News tomorrow, 6 until 8.
Pat celebrates that he's going to have Friday off, and he's got Hometown Health talking about the differences in legislative session outcomes between Wisconsin and Minnesota through the lens of family physicians.
Dr. Lyerly on it. Very good. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Pat Kreitlow. Every morning, 6 until 8. Stay tuned. Trigby joins us on the other side. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Oh yeah, Donald Trump. That was just winning.
That was a great tweet.
Did you see my no?
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing so. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on a Wednesday, July 19th, 2023. Mr. Aaron Zommer is our producer and engineer on the board. And as per usual, on a Wednesday, our friend, our ongoing contributor, the senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, Mr. Trigby Olson, Wisconsin native, grew up in the River Falls area, and like myself, was involved in Wisconsin Republican Party ideals for years. Trigby went on to work for people like Mitch McConnell and John McCain and others, and around the globe spreading democracy, and like me, has since left the party for our own personal reasons, because it simply is now the party of Trump. And until we find
party left us, Todd, yeah, exactly. We didn't leave the party.
Exactly.
We're like Ronald Reagan back in the day.
Glad to have along. If you want to weigh in, always welcome your calls. Trigby and I on a Wednesday, 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Make it easy for you. 844-96-PARTY. Or you can download the Civic Media app. Simply go to your app store on iPhone or Android and type in Civic. That's C-I-V-I-C, Civic Media. It'll come up. You can download it. Takes less than a minute, and it is free. Trigby, a very busy week since we talked to you last. Of course, the big news yesterday. Yet another, we've kind of lost count, right? Another Trump indictment, this one surrounding January 6th.
So much indicting, Todd. So much indicting.
That's really good. So much indicting.
Yeah.
Not a lot of winning, but a lot of indicting.
No. You know, here's the thing about this one. It really is a win for the January 6th Select Committee, right? Yeah, like, that's what kicked DOJ in the butt to actually pursue this. You know, at the end of the day, to me, and just as somebody who's worked on democracy and preaching it to others and on a lot of elections, and who likes being a part of campaigns and elections, the whole fake electors thing is really just an outrageous mockery of the process. And people of all political stripes should be concerned that you had people doing this. It's crazy that you would, I mean, they basically were trying to perpetrate a fraud, and it was going on in the state of Wisconsin. And those people who participated in that, yes, Donald Trump was the architect of it, but the people who were participating in that It's shameful. They should be ashamed.
Well, and I want to get to that in a second. Before I leave that, though, get to the Michigan and Wisconsin on the on these fake electors. The fact, I mean, yet again, and this is just kind of almost a weird parlor game, but of all the indictments out there, and perhaps those yet to come, particularly in Georgia, which one do you still think, or which one or two do you think still has the best sticking power to actually get Trump into trial and perhaps at some point a conviction?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, so that's harder for me to talk about. Mm-hmm. I get it, so I can't. I wouldn't want to project on that. What I would say is, I don't think politically, and I think this is what people have to understand. You know, Donald Trump did not adhere, based on that indictment or the coming indictment, to the rules of the last election, and he said multiple times he might not concede if he lost. And the truth is, we should have all known that he wasn't going to concede, that he wouldn't accept the results. And if you're not accepting the results, if you're going into election not willing to accept the results of the election, then you're not really playing the game of elections and democracy. You're playing a different game. You're playing a zero-sum autocratic one. And the same goes with the rule of law. He isn't trying to litigate power through the constitutional norms or just the norms of our democracy, including rule of law or elections. He's planning on litigating this on the streets with, you know, his supporters. And that's what he's banking on. And I think he still gets the nomination. I think he gets the nomination even if he's sitting in a holding cell in Leavenworth.
Yeah.
Sort of like him saying he could shoot people on Fifth Avenue and his voters wouldn't leave him.
And I think that's an important thing to keep reminding people, right? Because people, well, you know, if he's indicted or if he or not indicted, but if he's on a trial or certainly if he gets convicted, I mean, he can't run, can he? He can't become president. And the answer is yes. The only one he cannot become president on is if he is convicted of treason. That's my understanding from attorneys like Matt
Flynn.
Well,
if the Senate had impeached him.
Well, or the Senate impeached him, right.
But they chose not to do that. They could have ensured that he would not be able to run for office again. Mm-hmm. The Republican Party, and quite frankly, somebody I used to work for, Mitch McConnell, and a bunch of others, made a decision not to do that. It was a political decision.
All right, there, Trigby. Had a little freeze up of the old, this is, you know, it's technology. It's live. If you ever wondered, is this show live or not? Well, this is a perfect opportunity to realize
the Trump side's playing to win and the other side's playing to try and manage the problem.
All right. You cut out just for a second, Trigby. I'm not sure if it's our connection or yours, but you're back now. That's all that matters.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I said this on the show yesterday, agree or disagree. I said, you know, when I was in Wisconsin Republican Party conventions, places like Middleton and Green Bay and Appleton and La Crosse, Milwaukee, you were there too. And if someone said when we were nominating or supporting resolutions, supporting Ronald Reagan for president, George H.W. Bush, Bob Dole, even George W. Bush, Tommy Thompson, for, if you had said at that time, you know what, at some point, Todd, you guys are going to be backing somebody. Your party is going to be backing somebody that has multiple indictments, and one of which is to help overthrow an election. You would have been laughed out of the room. I mean, this would have been unthinkable 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it would have been unthinkable up until January 6th in a lot of ways. The fact that that occurred and it was clear. You know, they were all saying it. Kevin McCarthy and others were saying the president needs to stop this. They all knew who could stop it and who instigated it. And yet they continued to try and manage him rather than confront him, assuming that, well, the legal process will take its course and then, you know, he'll get indicted. They keep every single time. And at the Lincoln Project, we've been calling them out on this as people who are former senior Republicans and saying you're wrong on this. Mm. It just isn't going to work. You can't manage this. You have to fight it.
Yeah. Go to the lines. Welcome your calls for Trigby and myself on this subject of Trump or any other politics of the week. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. 2789. Go to Jack in Merrimack. Jack, we always appreciate you listening and calling in. What say you?
Well, it seems to me that the elephant in the room that until just yesterday and today, virtually no one was talking about is the attempted political coup against American democracy. The slates of fraudulent electors that Ron Johnson and others attempted to present as legitimate to the vice president in an attempt to overturn legitimate election and electoral college results haven't been disavowed by even one single member of the current Republican Party. They haven't even been discussed in Congress, much less in the gerrymandered Republican legislatures around the country. Mm. And this is despite the fact there was a clear attempt to disenfranchise literally millions of voters in those states that tried to present those unlawful electors. I think this is a much more dangerous situation than the obvious violent January 6th physical attack on Congress, because you can solve that by sufficient police action. Much more dangerous is an illegal attempt to foist a quasi-political insurrection in the guise of being legal. It's not. And finally, it's happening in Michigan. And in every state, every single conspirator, but especially all those who illegally signed that they were legitimate electors, should be charged. They've got it's got to happen, especially on those who are now in office, like Bob Spindell, who should immediately be removed. These guys should be removed from all positions where they could possibly influence election results or legislation.
I really appreciate the call, Jack. Thank you so much, Jack from Merrimack. Always appreciate you calling in. Trigby, great points, I think, on these fake electors, both in Michigan and Wisconsin.
Fantastic point. And Jack is 100% right. The what happened on January 6th is important. But that is easier to address in some ways. Mm-hmm. But the underlying willingness to say the rules of democracy, and a foundational one, electors, probably the most important piece of the Constitution in terms of how elections happen, the election of the president of the United States, that is entirely dependent on electors. And the idea that you would have people perpetrate a fraud like that and that the RNC was participating in it, that means without honor in that process, our democracy would be doomed.
I want to come back and talk about the difference between Michigan and Wisconsin, if there is any. We're going to get back to that. But before the break, I want to go back to the phones, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, up in beautiful Spooner, Wisconsin. No better place to spend a summer in Wisconsin than Spooner. Paul, up in Spooner. Paul,
Spooner Rails.
And what a great place to live. I can say I've been a county chair. I've been at the 7th city level, and I've worked a lot in Democratic politics. And I can say that in the last 30 years, nothing has been better for the Democratic Party to fire up our base than Donald Trump. And that's sad to say. If Donald Trump were to go away tomorrow, their party is completely in shambles. Their civil war has been going on since he took over. It's going to take them a long time to rebuild, and we really need to take advantage of this and keep on pointing out they need to go after all these electors. Ron Johnson, he narrowly won this last time. We need to get back this state. We need to get back this where we can get redistrict. But in reality, these criminals have been getting away with this for a long time, and finally it's coming to a head. We sat here for 4 years twiddling our thumbs and just biting our teeth, wondering what the heck is wrong. But you got to also look back and say, Donald was not elected by Republicans. Donald he took over their party. Yeah. And they got to figure out what party's left for them. Because I think when Donald leaves, a whole bunch of people that came out of the woodwork to vote for him are going to go back into the woods. They're not going to vote for Republicans.
Paul, before I let you go, I got about a minute left here. I want to get this in. Are you listening to us on the news station at Hayward, 9:10 a.m. or on the app?
Actually, I'm traveling today.
Oh, very nice. Well, good
from Spooner. I do listen on that station.
Oh, cool.
But I'm down in the Menominee area, so I'm picking it up on the Chippewa Falls area right now.
Oh, great. New WCFW down there. So that's great. I'd just like to know that. And also, very quickly, like about 30 seconds, what do you think, as someone who lives in Spooner, what do you think the top one or two issues voters are going to vote on in 2024 in Spooner?
Right now, everything is about guns. Number one is guns. They keep on pushing guns. It's the same thing as Republicans, guns, gays, and abortion. Guns, gays, mm-hmm. abortion. That's all they care about. They're going to go against everybody. But you know what? They're losing. The majority of the people don't believe the way that the politicians are voting in their party.
Really appreciate the call, Paul, from Spooner. Thanks for listening to us on Civic Media. Thanks for the call. Give Trigby a chance to respond after the break. Stay with us now. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Here comes summer. School is out, oh happy day. Here comes summer. I'm gonna grab my girl and run away. Here comes summer. We'll go swimming every day. And let the sun shine bright on my happy summer home.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin and around the world on the Civic Media app. Appreciate you being with us here on a Tuesday afternoon. That song from 1959, a big hit in 1959 called Here Comes Summer. And it was produced by the father of our next guest. He is Josh Mills. Probably a person that has two of the most interesting parents that I've ever known or ever heard about. Marty Mills was his father and partnered with singer-songwriter Jerry Keller to form that music company in the 1959 hit Here Comes Summer. Marty Mills was your father. Your mom, the great and legend in Hollywood, Eddie Adams. Josh, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Absolutely. You guys did a deep dive. Jerry Keller, I love it.
The more I read about your parents, it was just like, it was like a page turning novel. I just couldn't stop. I'm like, my gosh, this guy has been in contact with all these people that I have idolized and loved for years, from Groucho Marx to Johnny Carson to John Wayne to George Burns. And I'm like, holy cow, you've had the opportunity to be around these people, not see them on stage, but just in their element of being people. That must have been extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of opportunities with my mom. One of her best friends was Jack Lemmon and Felicia Farr, his wife. So I spent Christmases with the Lemmons all the time. But I had weird experiences from my dad's side because he was a celebrity photographer and shot everything from Battle of the Network Stars to, you know, tennis and golf and all these crazy things. So I remember being pretty young, like 5 or 6, and my dad shooting the Glenn Campbell show, and I'm sitting next to his parents, and the camera turns around, and here's my parents, and I'm sitting right next to them. So I had weird experiences, for sure.
Well, you've taken all this, and you put it into a fantastic podcast called Rarefied Air, and air spelled H-E-I-R, as an heir apparent or an heir, and you talk to kids like yourself of famous people, and I think it's brilliant.
Thank you. I love it too. I had an interesting couple of meetings growing up with you know, kids of celebrities. Carney Wilson was a good friend, so the Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys were always around. John Kay from Steppenwolf, Sean Kay was a friend as well. So I had these moments where I realized that we had shared experiences, but they were all different. But I could relate and they could relate to weird stories about, you know, going to the Lemons on Christmas or something. So I had a conversation with Kelly Carlin, and she told me this story about being with her dad, George Carlin, and her mother in Hawaii with Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet and Sammy Davis Jr. And I was like, yeah, I had that kind of a dinner. I wasn't at that dinner, but I know exactly what that's like as a 12-year-old kid sitting there trying to be entertaining with Sammy.
And what's it like now to, I mean, it has to give you like an inside track, right? Because it has to be kind of an exclusive club. I mean, someone like me grew up in Wisconsin. You know, I have no idea what I've been to Hollywood a few times, but I mean, but to be in those private moments, do you find that it's easier to get guests because you're in that club?
Sometimes it helps and sometimes it doesn't. I've had people that just flat out turn me down because either they don't want to talk about things in their past or they don't know what's coming. But I've had we've done 130 episodes, and it's been great talking to, you know, I just talked to Victoria Price, Vincent Price's daughter, and it was an amazing experience talking to her because I've never met her. I've never been in the same room with her. And yet, her telling me a story about her dad taking her to get the best taquitos in Los Angeles was very much akin to my own story about my dad taking me to New York for pizza. So, you know, there are these weird shared experiences, but it's just a moment of going, oh, it's Vincent Price taking you to go get taquitos in Los Angeles.
If I could take a moment and feel free to jump in at any time, because my sister and I will sometimes sit around and be like, wow, our family is just weird sometimes, you know? But looking at your story, I don't want to say it's weird, but I mean,
it is
unique. And where your mom, the great Edie Adams, a Hollywood legend, and her first husband was Ernie Kovacs, a legend in Hollywood. And as I understand it, his ex-wife kidnapped his two children, and your mother then had to help raise those kids' stepchildren. Then he was tragically killed in a car accident in the early 60s. And that's when she met your father, who was a legend in his own right, Marty Mills, who, as you said, was a great photographer, also a music producer, and photographed some of the most famous people in Hollywood. I mean, that alone, how you, we talk about blended families. I mean, my gosh, this is the ultimate blended family, is it not?
Yeah, I had a moment when I was about 10 where I realized that there were five people at the dinner table and four of us had different last names. It was a weird, weird moment. But I didn't think of it as weird. I mean, I thought that was odd at the time, but I didn't understand celebrity or I didn't understand the culture at the time. But yeah, I had half-sisters. I had stepsisters. I had stepfathers. I had sisters that weren't even sisters. I mean, it was all very weird. But in a weird way, my mom kind of tried to put this all together and tried to make it as much of a family as possible. But yeah, I mean, my parents were divorced. It was two stepfathers or whatever. It's weird.
But in a good way. I mean, you know, historic, right? I mean, your mom and Ernie Kovacs were the last two guest actors on the Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball program, and they didn't even know it at the time, right? They were filming this, and they didn't even know it. I mean, to have that sort of insight, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, it was so undercover that the crew knew, but my mom chose to sing a song, which subsequently has become fairly famous, and you can find versions of it on YouTube. People love this version. She did a song called That's All, and it's a very sad song, and my mom had no idea about this, and she sang the song, and she's like, the crew is crying, and like, you know, she's like, oh, I must have done amazing, like, this was fantastic, and it was like, no, Lucy and Desi, it was sort of their story. My mom didn't realize it, but was singing and channeling sort of their story on the very last episode. Yeah. So it was a weird one for her too.
I mean, your mom was a Tony Award-winning actress, worked with legends like Milton Berle and Sammy. There's a great story I found, Sammy Davis Jr., where she insisted that she and Sammy Davis Jr. be equal in the camera singing a song. And at the time, that was historic in and of itself.
Yeah, my mom had a television show called Here's Edie, which then became the Edie Adams Show. And one of the things in 1964, 60, 63, 64 was that essentially it was unspoken, but a black man could not stand equally with a white woman. And my mom was the producer of the show. And there was a sponsor. It was called the Consolidated Cigar Company. They bought the time. My mom was the producer, and she forced the network to have Sammy and her sit next to each other and sing a song, which hadn't been done. And there were, you know, places in parts of this country, you can figure out where, that were not happy about that. And there were letters and things like that. But my mom was very much into civil rights and really wanted to make sure that, you know, I mean, Sammy was an insane talent. If you ever see that episode, he's singing, he's dancing, he's doing soliloquies, he's playing drums. It's just, it's insane. And she's like, no, this person needs to be, he is my equal for sure.
And I only love it because I'm a former Republican. I left the party in 2011 over voting rights issues. But I believe I have it correct. Your mom was actually an Eisenhower Republican, was she not?
Well, here's the thing. When she was brought up, yes, her parents were definitely more conservative. Mm. They were Pennsylvania folks. But by the 60s, she is stumping for every Democrat. She was really a Hubert Humphrey supporter. Mm-hmm. She's in this great documentary that I saw where she's with Buddy Hackett and they're doing something for LBJ. She was a tried and true Democrat by the time she was out of the 50s. She was not a Republican at all. And it's funny because that's one of the things on like on Wikipedia that mm-hmm. I keep trying to take off because essentially she was not that person for 45 years, the second half of her life.
I think that's fascinating because, I voted straight Democratic since, you know, 2011, 2012. But I think people evolve, or maybe not so much we evolve, as these political organizations evolve into something we no longer believe in.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, Ernie was the kind of guy who, he didn't do political humor. He was mm-hmm. not, he didn't stump for anybody. In fact, his thing was, if you took yourself seriously, mostly politicians, you deserved a pie in the face. That was the first thing that needed to happen. You got a pop.
And, go ahead.
Yeah. So, and my mom was political, but not quietly, but it wasn't part of her act, or it wasn't mm-hmm. part of what she did, because she did do a stage act. She was for many years doing ballrooms and cruises and major hotels and big mm-hmm. stuff like that. But behind the scenes, my mom was absolutely a true blue Democrat. And, you know, when it's funny, when Humphrey died, it was actually on Ernie's anniversary of his death. And wow. It just devastated her. And she mm-hmm. kind of locked herself in her room for, I don't know, the whole day. And I just remember not understanding why she wasn't coming out. But she was mm-hmm. very upset.
We're talking with Josh Mills. He is the host of the podcast called Rarefied Air, spelled H-E-I-R, Rarefied Air, talking about talking with kids of famous people. It's a fantastic podcast. You should go to it, rarefiedairpodcast.com. Also, created this book called Ernie in Kovacs Land. And Ernie Kovacs, again, we could do an hour on this. This is a guy yeah. who every major performer from Jim Henson to Johnny Carson to Jimmy Kimmel to Conan O'Brien have emulated or studied him. Anybody who's in broadcasting knows who this guy is. And your mom was married to him for until his death. Just here, I want to say this. This is something I hope this is true, because I found this and reportedly at his funeral. At Ernie Kovacs' funeral, the pastor said that Ernie summed up his life like this. He said, quote, "I was born in Trenton, New Jersey in 1919 to a Hungarian couple. I've been smoking cigars ever since." I thought yes. that was fantastic. I hope that's true, is it?
Yes, I mean, and Ernie, on his tombstone, it says nothing in moderation. And if anybody ever lived their life to the absolute fullest, it was Ernie Kovacs. He was a person that didn't skimp on anything. And when he passed away, he left my mom in serious debt. IRS came calling, ABC came calling. My mom was about $500,000 in debt in 1962. And it was partially because, I mean, she said, look, I take responsibility for it. I'm half of this equation too. It's not all Ernie's fault, but Ernie did like to spend. And we forget, in the 1950s, there was a tax bracket where you were in the 91% tax bracket. Yeah. So for every dollar you earned, you got 9 cents.
Wow.
And Ernie just thought that was stupid and was like, I'm not paying it. And that's how you end up $500,000 in debt.
But had a hell of a life, you know, but live big.
He did. He, you know, when he was just out of high school, he had pleurisy and he was in a pauper's hospital in New Jersey for almost a full year, probably wow. 10 months. Wow. And I believe that he really started to realize that, you know what, anything can happen in this world and I don't know what's going to happen. And he just said, F it. I am going to live my life the way I want to live my life and no one's going to tell me any different. And that's exactly what he did.
Amazing. About 90 seconds before the first break, we're going to come back and talk more, but set it up, if you'd be so kind, Josh. This wonderful book, Writings, Drawings, Photographs of Television's Original Genius, Ernie in Kovacs Land.
Yeah, it's a book that I put together with co-authors, editors, Pat Thomas and Ben Modell, who is our Kovacs archivist, by the way. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, I had all this amazing stuff in our archive that only I could see, whether it was Ernie's diagram of how he wanted his records laid out in his house, or it could have been a script, or it could have been budgets from The Tonight Show. It could have been a million things. And I just thought, you know what? This and the book is put together almost like you're taking a look into Ernie's brain.
Going to come back and talk about it on the other side. Josh Mills is our guest. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock. That is 10 minutes before our friend Matt Flynn steps in with Matt Flynn Direct. Not going to want to miss it. A great show ahead with Matt a little after the news at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock. Right now, our guest this half hour is Josh Mills. He is the host of a fantastic podcast. Please add it to your podcast rotation. You will not be sorry. I listened to a great one today, Buddy Ebsen from the Beverly Hillbillies and his daughter. And it was just how he was lined up to play the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. And I kind of knew that, but I didn't know the whole story. And Josh Mills, the host of Rarefied Air and the author of Ernie in Kovacs Land, joins us. Josh, it was a fantastic listen.
Yeah, thank you. I love doing that one. And I love that story. It's an insane story. You kind of, depending how old you are, you think of Buddy Ebsen, or you don't think of Buddy Ebsen, depending how old you are, but there's either the Tin Man, or there is Barnaby Jones, or there's mm-hmm. Beverly Hillbillies. And this story about how he was not in Wizard of Oz is insane. And it was great hearing that behind the scenes story.
That's the kind of content you can listen to. Each one, a golden nugget, is called Rarefied Air. Air is spelled H-E-I-R, rarefiedairpodcast.com. Please check it out. Also, this new book about Ernie Kovacs, a television and broadcasting legend. Your mom was married to him before she met your father. Of course, Ernie Kovacs died tragically in a car accident. And in fact, I believe I read where he was such an icon that a photographer, and of course, journalism is journalism, the photographer simply photographed his hand after the car accident with an unlit cigar next to it because he was famous for his mustache and his smoking of a cigar.
Yeah, that was actually published, believe it or not, in the Herald Examiner, in the Los Angeles Herald Examiner. And I've actually never seen the photo because I purposely have not wanted to see it. But, you know, in the 1960s, we're still at a point where who knows if someone posed that picture. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. There's a guy named Ouija who was a crime photographer who, you know, kind of set up some shots. But, you know, yeah, it's part of the legend for sure.
But Ernie Kovacs, as I said, anybody who's ever watched a Better Brown broadcast, he had an influence on everyone from Johnny Carson to Jim Henson and the Muppets and way beyond. In fact, I just want to read this quickly. These were the pallbearers at Ernie Kovacs' funeral. It was Jack Lemmon, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Billy Wilder, and Mervyn LeRoy. Is that correct?
I mean,
all of Hollywood was there. I mean, this guy's a legend out in Hollywood, and your mom was married to him until his untimely death.
Yeah, and, you know, my mom said it was amazing being married to Ernie. She said he woke up every day in a manic high and, you know, this is the best coffee. These are the best eggs. This is the best toast I've ever had. And she, you know, it was amazing for a Pennsylvania Dutch girl to meet this crazed Hungarian guy who was about 6'3" and had a mustache, probably smoked like, you know, 10 cigars a day. It was a real change. And I think she loved it. And she was, you know, very happy with Ernie.
What inspired you to put this compilation, this coffee table book of Ernie and Kovacs Land together?
Yeah. Well, my mom, I've heard from television and radio people, your mom is a first ballot Hall of Famer in the Preservationists Hall of Fame, if we have one.
Sure.
My mom realized in the 1960s that Ernie's stuff was being taped over or was being thrown away. And like a lot of things, the whole Tonight Show run in New York is gone because it's been dumped in the Hudson River. Mm-hmm. But my mom got a quitclaim, got a lawyer, bought everything back, and she preserved Ernie's legacy and her own as well. Mm-hmm. And so I really sort of felt like it's sort of my duty to keep this going. My mom spent a good portion of her life trying to preserve Ernie Kovacs' legacy because she was on his show. She was married to him. They weren't a comedy team in a very traditional sense like Lucy and Desi, but they were contemporaries and they were married. So my mom wanted to make sure that his genius, because he is called television's original genius, it was preserved.
Has to be, and his two children are no longer with us. Is that correct? I mean, he wasn't your dad. It wasn't even your stepdad because he had passed before your parents even met. But how did you end up overseeing this?
Yeah. So in a very Ernie way, he died without a will. Mm-hmm. And my mom ended up she paid for things. So my mom was left in $500,000 in debt. She paid the debt off. She didn't file for bankruptcy. She worked her butt off for, a decade or more. Mm-hmm. And she basically bought back things not just physical or these tapes. She bought back the desk that they had. She bought back the things that the IRS was literally taking from the house and saying, no, I will pay you back. And she did. So that's how I came to own it, is that she literally paid twice for something she already owns.
What do you hope that readers will take away from not just Ernie Kovacs, but also your mom in this, after reading this book, Ernie and Kovacs Land?
Yeah. It does come out Tuesday. And I hope that they see that we tried to keep it. It's not chronological. It's very scattered. And we kept it that way because that's how Ernie was. He was an insomniac. He slept 5 hours a night. Things came to him extemporaneously. And I felt like maybe this book needs to be kind of a look into Ernie's brain or what he was like as a person as well as a comedian. But I hope people see, he really was an innovator and he was television's original genius. That's what I would say.
You were so very kind as to send me a PDF of a lot of this. And it's just, I cannot wait to purchase this book because, I mean, talk about scatterbrained, unorganized, having thoughts come to you in weird times. That's pretty much my life. I'm no Ernie Kovac. I'm not even close. That's the way my brain works, right? As someone who's like that, I can appreciate that line of thinking.
Well, and it very much is. I mean, Ernie did not do nothing in moderation, right? He went full bore on everything. And a lot of the stuff that my mom was the one saying to him, make sure you get credit, producer's credit. Make sure you get writer's credit. Make sure you do that. My mom was the one in the background going like, yeah, you're creating all this amazing stuff, but if nobody knows you did it, it doesn't mean anything. I really want to make sure that both Ernie's legacy and my mom's legacy are a bit entwined because she was a big part of what we know Ernie to be in 2023.
I left you a short amount of time for a big question. Of all the people you interacted with over your years in Hollywood with your parents, what one or two celebrity really sticks out as like, that's just a cool person?
I had a really weird moment where I was in Venice, Italy, and we met Christopher Walken when he was making the Bond movie. He was Max Zorin in A View to a Kill. And I just had a moment of like, what the am I doing here? Like, I'm not, this is this great actor. And he was super cool. And what we found out, even more crazy, when he was a boy, he was a dancer and he was on Ernie's show.
No way.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I just got goosebumps.
Elliot Gould was another one. Crazy.
An amazing way to end this interview. Josh, thank you so much. This has been spectacular time. Josh Mills, he's the host of Rarefied Air podcast. You can find it at rarefiedair.com. And also the book coming out this week, Ernie in Kovacs Land, available wherever you get your books. Josh, thank you so much for joining us from Los Angeles today. Have a wonderful day.
Oh, thank you. You too. I appreciate all the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. Matt Flynn is next. For Mr. Aaron Zommers and Luke Mathers, I'm Todd Albaugh. See you tomorrow on the Civic Media Radio Network.